Welcome inside episode 669 of the Locked On Senators podcast. I'm Ross Levitan on the outskirts of enemy territory in Winnipeg, Manitoba, alongside Brandon Piller up in the Blue Mountains, and the Sens losing streak has reached 7 games, but hey, at least they got a point in the 4-3 loss to the New Jersey Devils.
Speaking of points, Ross, Mark Mathot joins the show to make a lot of great points on this game, and we get into agent Twitter beef, defenseman talk, and a whole lot more with Matt on our usual Friday show.
Lots of great content coming up on a Friday edition, and it's all brought to you by Bet Online. More props, odds, and lines than ever before. Visit Bet Online. It's where the game starts. And now the show starts. This is the Locked On Senators podcast. Your team every day.
Your Locked On Senators, your daily podcast on the Ottawa Senators, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm Jake Sanderson, and you're listening to Locked On Senators podcast.
I'm Tim Schützler, and you're listening to the Locked On Senators podcast.
Thank you for making Locked On Senators your first listen on this Friday, November 11th. The show is free and available on all platforms, including on YouTube, where the best way you can help the show grow is to subscribe to the Locked On Senators channel. The road to 5,000 continues, and be a friend, tell a friend to do the same. We also want to know your thoughts on last night's game. You can leave those in the comments below. But first, Pilsy, we're wearing our poppies. We have all week. It's a very important day of the year, Remembrance Day in Canada.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the main thing, Ross, is just take time to reflect today on all the sacrifices that men and women of past, present, and future give to the common folk, the citizens of Canada, putting their lives at risk and in unfortunate cases, sometimes losing their lives or serious injuries. So definitely take a moment today to reflect on that. And look, there's a lot of crazy things going on in the world, but we're pretty fortunate, and it's thanks to a lot of people that have given their service for us.
Yeah, so make sure you buy a poppy and donate what you can. The Legions, everyone doing great things for veterans that come back and sometimes have to go through a lot of trauma that they've had to endure overseas. I had the chance to go to Normandy a few years ago, and it's just kind of like eerie when you're on the beaches there, just thinking of what happened and the unknown that all those soldiers came in. So we just want to pay our respects to every man and woman of service throughout. We appreciate your service. Thank you for allowing us to be a part of your day as well as, an escape of what's going on. We know we got a couple out in Nova Scotia that listen to the show, and we just want to know that you're appreciated. And I feel like as years go on, and of course people are still serving and will continue to serve, but the great wars, the World War One, World War Two, I remember growing up, right? There would always be veterans that would come and speak to you, and now time remains undefeated. There's less and less because it's now going on 70 plus years since the Second World War. So it's even more important that people who are still with us continue to share those stories, whether it's, through film, through books, through whatever it is. But it is a worthwhile thing to go down to the War Memorial 1 year as well if you are in Ottawa. All right, to the game last night, the Ottawa Senators, the losing streak continues. Pilsy, we get into it with Meth a lot, so we'll save it for there. But, like, where are you at? We said they had to win 2 out of 3, and so far they've got 1 of a possible 4 points.
Yeah, I mean, like, how many must-win games can you label in an 82-game season? Like, Drake Batherson said last night's game is a must-win. The Sens are now winless in their last 7, going home to Philly for Claude Giroux's homecoming party. You got to think that the boys are putting that as a must-win, especially after they lost to Philly the first time. So we talk about money on the board with Meth. There's going to be big money on the board for Claude Giroux here. But then you turn to the next game, Ross, and it's Daniel Alfredson's retirement night up against the Islanders.
Beyond retirement night, Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, yes, sorry. That's a mix-up there. Hall of Fame night. So you got to think at home you're going to want to have a win there. That's got to be a must-win game. But I don't know. Like, I'm at a point now where my expectations just keep getting lower and lower and lower, because I think this team is going to turn it around, but it might be too little too late. Like, Ross, we've seen the past couple seasons, the Senators finished the season hot. Like, one of the hottest teams, if you go by their, like, final games record in that last stretch. But they're already out of it in November, so it's all a moot point at that point. Like, who cares if you have a great finish to the season when your season's already lost the second month in?
It's really unfortunate. And the season's not completely lost yet, but they're starting
to slipping away.
They're starting to walk the plank.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not in the water yet. The Sharks haven't gotten to them, but they are on the plank. And there's a sword behind them. And that sword is held by the next few opponents. And there's some decent ones in there. But, like, I have, speaking of swords, Sabres next week. That is a complete must-win game as well. Talking about must-wins.
All three next games are must-wins?
Yeah. Well, Buffalo started so hot, so they gave themselves a little bit of cushion. But now they've lost four in a row. They're coming back to earth. Like, yeah, these are all must-win games now. Until, like, Pierre Dorion said it, this next set of 10 games is crucial. They haven't gotten a win yet. Yeah. My question to you, though, Pilsy, who starts in Philly, Cam Talbot or Anton Forsberg?
This is so tough because, like, I can't say that either of them has been particularly bad, but neither of them have stole a game. You know what I mean? Like, the reason you're able to pose this, Ross, is because there's no obvious choice.
Pilsy, Forsberg hit his daunted 40 shots against. I guess he did get a point, though, out of it. So you can continue that to the record when he faces 40 or more shots. But, yeah, that stinker against Nico Hischier in the second period was like...
Yeah, but also I still he's got to have that shot, but I went back and watched that one, Ross. I'd like for Hamnick to be a little bit more aggressive on that play. The loose puck's right there. All he needs to do is make that quick decision to be aggressive. Even after he doesn't get the loose puck and he sure has it, there's kind of a two-on-one forming, but it's not really that dangerous. The other guy doesn't have that much space. I would have rather Hamnick just fully turn the jets on and pressure Hischier rather than allow him to get in there. Because, I mean, if that was a guy on the fourth line for the Devils, sure, give him that space. But this is Nico friggin' Hischier we're talking about. First overall pick, the captain of this team, who's one of the hottest players in the Eastern Conference right now. Like, don't give that guy space. So, although I agree that's one Forsberg's got to have, I would like a better play from Hamonic there too. But to answer your question, I didn't answer your question. I would go Forsberg because I thought he made a lot of great saves other than that stinker with Hischier there. And the other goals I thought were results of poor defensive plays as per usual with this squad. And seeing him snap his stick after that game, like, he wanted that badly. So to feed off that emotion, let Forsberg have another start here. And also, as Tendy's Ross, we know you need time to go through the ebbs and flows of being a goalie. I don't like the notion of putting a goalie in, he has a frustrating loss, and then taking him out and having him sit on that. So I'm going Forsberg next game.
Okay. Well, we'll see if this rotation continues because Talbot got Vancouver, then they go to Forsberg, and now it'll be interesting. A slight revenge game, although Talbot only played four games against Philly. Hey, good vibes last time they were in Philly. Brady got his 30th goal in a meaningless game 82, and now we're at game 14, and it might be meaningless. Pilsy will get you a preview tomorrow morning with three things you need to know. We've been posting those on our Instagram at lockedon.senators and on our YouTube page as shorts, so they don't come up in the immediate uploads area, but we do have a little bonus content for you there. Shocker, as we are your one-stop shop for all things Ottawa Senators. Couple great guests this week. If you missed Bruce Kerriok yesterday, I thought he came off very likable in our interview with him. So if you missed that, definitely worth tuning in. And then Mark Mathot today, and we get into a lot more of the game and the things that go along outside the game when a losing streak like this happens. But before we get to it, I want to let everyone know you should follow at Sen Central. Not only will Pilsy and Jack Richardson have the postcast tomorrow, I'm going to jump on remotely from B-dubs. No free ads, but Buffalo Wild Wings is going to host me tomorrow afternoon in North Dakota as I'm going to go. Pilsy, should I throw Tyler Kleven in the trunk of my car? Like, the Sens need anything to get a spark.
Yeah, I don't think Tyler Kleven would fit in the back of the Civic, Ross, but you can try.
I'm excited to see it. So I'll have a full report on the K train and how he's doing, and have some boots on the ground at the Ralph Engelstad Arena. Martian, get your pen and paper out, because that boots on the ground picture is coming soon. But yes, we will still have the postcast tomorrow. Note the start time, 1 p.m. start time in Philly. So the postcast should be around 4 p.m. Eastern. Pilsy, any final thoughts going to the weekend? Because we take meth right into the end of today's show.
I don't know, Ross. Like, I would love to hit the people with some positivity and, you know, the Sens are going to win this game for Giroux. But when you have just so many games that are decided by one goal and you're just so close in it, it's like the Sens are trying to catch smoke with their bare hands. They're right there. They got it. And then, boom, slips through their fingers. So I'm sorry, guys. Usually I try to be positive Pilsy, but I got nothing here. Let's just hope Giroux's homecoming is the spark that this team needs.
Well, let's finish off with even more depressing news for you, Pilsy. The Seattle Kraken have reclaimed Magnus Hellberg. We wish him well. It was a good one game he played. We thought he was going to get claimed, and he's going right back where they got him from.
Although, Ross, that's not too depressing for me because, A, it's far away from the Sens.
Toronto.
Yeah, exactly. That's the big thing. And B, he's already got a sick Seattle kit, so at least we get to see that kit. And he hooks up with our guy, Joey Decord. So we've got some love for the Seattle tendies over there, that's for sure. And we are eternally grateful to Martin Jones for giving us Tim Stützle.
Yes, they are certainly a goalie-friendly organization out on the West Coast. I see what you did there. All right, Pilsy. So let's get into our chat with Mark Mathot. But first, you got a word from one of our favorite sponsors.
Yes, it's betonline.net, guys. The trusted online sportsbook of the Locked On Podcast Network. And for a good reason. They got all the latest odds, news, scores, player performance, props, over-unders, money line, puck line, whatever you like. They got it. And sure, the Ottawa Senators have been on a slump, but there's ways around it because it's not just hockey on the website. They got football, basketball, baseball, soccer, golf, UFC, any sport. You can find it on betonline.net. So head to the website today, guys, or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. Guys, it's betonline.net where the game starts.
All right, now let's get to our conversation with friend of the show. It's Mark Mathot. All right, we now welcome on a very, very good friend of the show. It's Mark Mathot. You saw him on TSN on Thursday breaking down the Ryan Reynolds situation and all things Ottawa Senators. Meth, what was the vibe in the rink there on Thursday?
It was wild. Almost to the point where I was like kind of cringing a little bit because I'm like, here we are, like celebrating this guy, like he's the next coming in. but I do respect the fact that it's obviously very exciting for a lot of people. I know everyone's already heard me say all this stuff, but there was a buzz, and then, you know, I don't think it was that planned. I know that there was a plan to interview him. He was going to do like a one-on-one with Claire. And I believe that got shot down at some point, probably because he's trying to remain somewhat quiet about the whole thing. But yeah, when they announced him in the building, everyone lost their marbles and got up. And what was funny, and we talked about it on Overdrive, I think it was on Overdrive, where even the players, the Ottawa bench got up and started slapping their sticks on the wall. It's like, I don't think I've ever seen players do that for a celebrity. Anyway, all good. Lots of fun.
Yeah, I saw a couple of Leafs fans say, oh, it's so small town. And then a few Sens fans just posted the photo of The Rock in Toronto like 2 weeks ago. And they gave him a minute. And he's not buying the team. So, hey, how could they buy a win, Meth? Like, where are we at with this squad right now?
Well, I'm sure you guys covered a lot of this last night in your postcast. But I don't know, man. Like, you know, we've been kind of milling over this now for the week, you know, since the loss to Vancouver. Trying to find an answer. What's going on? Blame the defense, blame the coach, blame everybody, blow it up. I think at this point, you're just looking for consistency. And I had this interview. I was with the boys on 1200 yesterday with Lloydy. And we talked about like, what at this point, just to break this cycle, this streak, what do you do? Well, you need a goalie to stand on his head for the team right now, right? Like you're playing against Jersey yesterday, high powered offense, super fast team. You needed Forsberg to be huge. And I'm a huge Forsberg fan. I've always got his back. He didn't have a great game, right? We can all admit that. He was pretty good toward the end there. Like he had some real long stretches where he was fantastic, but it bit them a little bit on a couple of those soft goals. Those weren't all on him. You know, there were other issues on the ice happening at that time. But yeah, I feel for the leadership crew. Like you look at Brady, he looked dejected after the game. You saw him kind of hunched over on the bench. That's that feeling of helplessness, right? You, when you're on a skid like that, and I've been there before, particularly in my days with Columbus, where you're putting everything out there on the ice. And I mean, you guys watched the game. They were fantastic early on. I mean, they had tons of speed. They were flying. They were rolling lines. Even their fourth line at the beginning there, they like Austin Watson was flying around. Kastelic was flying around. But then you let in, you know, then Tatar gets the goal and things start to snowball. And then Hischier scores with less than 2 minutes left at the end of that first period. And you're thinking, oh no, like here we go again. You know, and they were in a good spot the whole game. It's certainly a step forward. You get your point, but it's not what obviously Ottawa wanted. It's not what the fans wanted. And, you know, the complaining and the being annoyed and frustration continues.
So when you're on a losing streak for six straight games and all of them essentially one goal games, and you finally make it past regulation, I know a lot of Sens fans were at least relieved for that. Like maybe the win's not there, but at least you made it past the point where you've been kind of snake bitten this whole time. As a player, Mark, when these players now lose this game, they go on to lose this, does that give them a bit of relief being like, well, at least we got 1 point, we made it to OT, or does it hurt even more being like, we got even closer and still couldn't get it done? Oh,
yeah, Pilsy, that's a good question. I would look at it, if I was playing, I would look at it through the lens of positivity. I would try to and be like, okay,
we
got a point, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at the entire body of work, like in that game, yeah, there were some breakdowns, but we got to remember that you're going to have breakdowns every game. Like this is going to happen. Now they're all magnified now because they're on a losing streak. So every time we see a mistake, as fans, as analysts, we're all like, oh, like I, you know, gotcha. You made a mistake there. It's going to happen. Both teams are doing it. Marino made a mistake yesterday. He's been fantastic defensively. He had a pretty glaring one, I think, on one of the goals too. So, you know, I think you have to be positive and just now you got to look towards Philly. You got to rinse it, get behind it, flush it down the toilet, move on to the next game. But even in overtime, like guys, they had some looks. I mean, they had some opportunities there. Pinto had
so many chances. Yeah, like, oh my God.
And he was feeling it. He had a great game. You know, he missed the net. I know Pooley had mentioned he's got to hit the net there. I do agree. But at the same time, it's like he took the shot. You know, he went for it. And I respect that. And and then that penalty, the Shabbat penalty. I mean, I don't know. I didn't like it. You got 2 minutes for bitching a guy, kind of. You know what I mean? Like you kind of overpower a player. But be that as it may, you have to deal with it. And I think the big contention point here, and I think I'm assuming you guys are going to bring this up, was the draw, right?
Yeah.
Tyler Mott taking the face off when you've got Claude on the bench, who's running at 75%.
Yep.
And it's not like Claude had just come off the ice. I think I had it written down because I wanted to check. You know, I wanted to make sure because I forgot. I'm like, well, maybe he was tired. Maybe he was sucking wind and needed a break. But it had been Brass and Pinto. Yep. Followed by Pinto and Batherson, right? So there were a couple shifts there. So, and I've had DJ's back lots this past week. I think there was a bit of a mistake there. Easy to point the finger when Mott loses the draw. But if you're going off the numbers, Tyler Mott had only taken two faceoffs all game. And that was one of them. And you lose the draw, right? So, you know, you can point the finger at one mistake and lose your marbles. I mean, I guess it's warranted to a degree, but I think overall, I was pretty happy with the way most of the team played. They seemed a lot more competitive. It was a better game than the Vancouver game.
Yeah, definitely. Even though they got outshot, it just felt like they were in it the whole time. And yeah, that's so frustrating because Giroux was on a 4-on-3 power play his whole overtime shift as well. It wasn't like he was sucking wind up and down.
I know. So what do you guys think? What do you guys think about that draw? Like, how would you have played that? Do you throw
it? You got to get Giroux in there. When he's winning 75%, win the draw, dump it. And I forget, are the Sens bench in that end or no?
No, far.
So that makes things a little trickier. But still, I mean, there's 40 seconds left. If you can win that draw and dump it, you've almost killed all of that. So I don't know. Like, the fact that they put a – like, I like Tyler Mott. I'm a Tyler Mott guy. But the fact that they put a winger out there and a winger that doesn't really take draws nonetheless in the most crucial draw of the game.
I put Brady out there.
So if you're DJ, though, DJ's probably looking at this is, and I'm not defending the decision. I'm just saying if I'm DJ and I'm looking at it, I can understand why he put Mott out initially, because he's thinking, okay, there's a chance we may win this. There's a chance we may lose it, but at least I've got a legitimate PK guy out there that can get in the lanes and knows how to kill a 4-on-3, right? Like a 4-on-3 isn't a 5-on-4.
Fair.
It's challenging and positionally a lot more complex for a forward. Again, I still think you go with a guy that can win a freaking face-off, obviously. But to try to make sense of that decision, I think the idea there was, okay, you know, they're probably like, I don't think DJ's predicting that they're just going to win cleanly, basically, and go D to D, one T, Dougie Hamilton, shelf. Like, you know what I mean? So I think I can understand where he was coming from, but I can also understand why everyone's being so critical of that decision, right? Because the guy had no draws all night. Anyway, I'm repeating myself. You probably could have gone with G. I just don't know how comfortable G is playing a 4-on-3. That's the only argument.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, what else frustrates me is you have 2 minutes of 5-on-3 against a third string goalie who comes in cold midway through the third period. He's been sitting there like all the fans for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And next thing you know, he's in there kicking out right pad saves backdoor on
he
the
was sick.
Like, good.
Doing like, oh,
it was literally the worst case scenario for Ottawa, right? Like never mind, like him perhaps looking a little shaky, cold, no confidence. The guy was like Patrick Roy out there just covering everything. So, you know, Ottawa, and this is where we can't get lost on fans. Ottawa played a legitimately, well, the hottest team in the NHL right now.
Yeah.
And they put up a good fight, almost broke the streak. So, you know, I know everyone's frustrated. I think we have to try to bring the temperature down a little bit. I can't believe I'm saying that because it's been 7 games in a row. But give them an opportunity here against Philly. I can understand the pitchforks if Philly doesn't go well, right? But that is a must-win game. Like, this is a winnable game. There's no excuses now. You have to win.
How much money will Claude Giroux have on the board in Philly?
Oh, when I played, when I was in, where was I? I'm trying to think. Well, the last legit player that I played with that put up a ton of money was Jamie Benn. I don't remember the milestone. It could have been just opening night, but he put up 10K in Dallas. I've never seen that before, you know, like $10,000 just right there. Like, here you go. Like I had anxiety for him, you know, and I'm a cheap prick to begin with. So that doesn't help. But for G, I'm going to say $5,000. I'm going to say $5,000. And that's significant.
Just quickly. I think some fans don't fully understand money on the board. Can you just give a quick explanation of money on the board for some fans that don't know?
Yeah, and it happens at all levels. It happens in the American League as well. Significantly less dollars, of course.
You put a couple ham and cheese sandwiches on the board?
Subway coupons.
But it still doesn't check out to me, because if you're looking at – anyway, I'm not going to get into the numbers, but I still think for the American League level, if you're putting up a couple $100, it's still too much given your salary. Yep. Anyway, so typically at the NHL level, you'll have trainers, right, that are going around the room, and they'll have a stat sheet out. And – you know, unbeknown to the player, maybe it's your 100th point, like you're at 99 points,
right?
You know, you're about to get to 100 points. A trainer will come in the room as you're all getting dressed before their game, and they'll be like, oh, Matt, you know, big night, 300th game for you, or whatever the stat may be. And then everyone just starts basically chirping you, like, oh, money on the board. So I have to put up at least $300, like, because it's a 300 number. Typically at the NHL level, you don't put anything on there less than $100 for sure. And then once in a while, guys will put up $100 towards the trainers. It's money that if you win the game goes directly into the team fund.
Gotcha.
That team fund, whether at the end of the year, some of it goes to charity, but more often than not, it goes towards team dinners and functions, Halloween party, dinner parties throughout the year. And that's what it gets used for. So that's sort of the reasoning behind money on the board. And it just galvanizes the group. Guys get all juiced up. Maybe guys will put up $100 for, you know, OT winner. We did that in the playoffs when I was playing in 2017 there. You know, like if we came off the ice after the third period, guys wanted to juice up the fund a little bit for the OT goal. Guys will put up, you know, $500 a person or something. So it's a good way to get everybody fired up.
That's awesome. I like that. Now, you played 624 regular season games, so I'm sure you saw a lot of money on the board. And you also saw, and yes, I looked this up, an average shift length of 46 seconds.
Ooh,
so if I say nice. Thomas Chabot had seven shifts over a minute and a half last night, would you say that's cause for concern?
How did I know you were going to segue into that? I just knew it. Because it's funny. It's funny, Ross. I looked this morning at the stat sheet. I'm like 31 and a half minutes or whatever he played last night. Where was it here? I got it written down somewhere.
31:58.
I didn't write it down. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is, he played a shitload of hockey last night. Yep. Now, those numbers as far as shift lengths will get inflated a little bit because of like power play and all that yada yada yada. That'll affect it. But I it's too much. It's too much ice, right? And we saw our friend Sean Simpson get into it with a couple agents. They called him out. We can talk about that after if you guys like. It's a little juicy. I don't know what the answer is. I think when the games are tight, you're seeing DJ kind of lean on him a lot because I think at this point the team is so desperate for a win that they're like, I don't care what people think. I need to put him out there because I think he just trusts him more than a lot of the other guys. You know, Sanderson's playing what he played, I think 23 minutes last night or 22. Yeah, 23 and a half minutes. He's their best defenseman right now. Yeah. You know, and Shabby's my guy. Love Shabby. He's still a very effective player when utilized properly. I don't like how much he's playing, you know, and even now you can't use the excuse that he doesn't have anyone to play with. I thought JBD had another pretty strong night, you know, didn't stand out in a bad way really at any point. He's going to make some mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes too. But as long as those mistakes aren't egregious to the point that it's costing you a goal every time he makes a glaring mistake, a lot like what we saw with Zaitsev and some of the other players, JBD isn't doing that. So that's good. He's really good at rebounding. You know, he makes a mistake here, he can recover really well. Thomas Chabot, I think, will be okay. He's just in a rough patch right now. How does he get out of this? I don't know. I think you have to scale down his minutes a little bit more. Like, I don't know what you guys are seeing. I don't view him as a legitimate threat right now, specifically on the power play. And I was talking to some of the guys in the booth the other night in the Vancouver game. It was AJ and could have been Jamie Baker or Lloydie. I forget who else was in. It could have been Creech. Anyway, the point is, we noticed Shabby's not really a shooting threat up top. And then you watch, and I know I'm cherry picking, but you see Dougie Hamilton. He's got that cannon. Obviously, he doesn't move like Chabot, move the puck around like that. He brings different elements to the game. But I'd love to have a shooting threat up top. I understand the NHL power plays don't revolve around the top anymore the way they used to. I know that. And the numbers back that up. But you still need a shooting threat. You still, like, just by chance, with the amount of power plays he's playing, you'd think he'd be stumbling on some goals. Like, how do you guys view that? Like, because I don't know if I'm off here.
No, I think you're perfectly on base. I'll let Pilsy pick up on it. But for me, like, Jake Sanderson showed it on that first period play on the Pinto goal that snap it around on the offensive
what blue a play. Line.
He's moving it around just a little bit faster. It feels like Chabot, he gets it. Then he's like, okay, now what do I do? Instead of it being more one touch around the side of the umbrella, like, it's killing me.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the thing too is, Mark, just because you have a shooter as your defenseman on the power play doesn't mean that that's your number one option. It just allows more options. So now, like, the thing with Chabot is everyone knows he can't shoot. So all you have to do is anticipate the pass and get a stick in the passing lane. And if he decides to shoot, I mean, it's usually a muffin and it's hitting shin pads and getting out of there. So having a guy like Hamilton that can blast it, it opens the space up for everyone else because he can't cheat the pass.
Really, really good point. And it's an excellent point in that you're right. The other team, if you have a legitimate shot threat up top, then they have to respect that, right? It's like when we play against, I'm trying to think, like when we played against Montreal and they had Shea Weber or, you know, Ovechkin. And I know these are different players, but every team typically has one guy that has a pretty good shot and you're aware of it and you have to know it's coming at some point. So you're perhaps leaning a little towards that player and it opens everything else up for everybody else, right? So as a defenseman, when I know there's a legitimate shot threat up top, I'm really focused on staying in that lane. And sometimes the flanks are left open a little bit more. Right. So yeah. And their power play, as far as their personnel goes up front, is so deep that if they do have that threat up top, man, like, think about the way they're slapping it around now. Imagine they have that one timer threat up top. So that's something that I've been thinking about lately, but other than that, Yeah, Shabby's he's fighting it a little bit right now. And I'm not going to get too harsh on it because I think people are probably exaggerating a little bit, but he's certainly not playing up to his standard. But the thing is, he knows that. How does he get out of it? He's going to have to work with the coaches, probably going to watch lots of video. But I think he's just overthinking it a little bit right now. A lot of pressure on him. He's feeling the weight, not producing points. And that can weigh on a player. But that's also part and parcel with what you're making, right? You're making $8 million a year. No one's really going to feel sorry for you. You have to figure it out. So he's in a tough spot.
I think some video he should watch is John Carlson in Washington, a guy who's always had Ovi right there as a shooter, but he scores 20 goals a year and half of them go off the power play.
But Ross, he's got a really good shot. Like yeah, Carlson's, sure. But I do agree with you, but he's got that shooting threat. So guys, when forwards, penalty killers are rushing up to the point towards Carlson, as an example, they know that he might shoot that puck or he's got that freaking bomb. So they're not running out as quickly as they probably would with Shabby or someone like that. Right. And that goes back to our original conversation about being a legitimate threat. So yeah, there's some players for sure that he could look at, but I don't know. I don't know if it's his shot. I'm gonna have to pay more attention to him, I guess, in the next couple of games on his wrister or his clapper, whatever it is. But I'd like to see him be more of a threat. I don't know how you fix it, though. I'm not a power play specialist, so I can only get into this so deep.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I wanted to get your opinion on this. So something that fans have been clamoring for a long time, number 22, finally a decision is made. He's waived. Now, what's the vibe in the locker room when that happens? I'm not sure how Nikita Zaitsev fits into the culture and locker room there, but nonetheless, this is a veteran guy, one of the most veteran guys on this team. He's been on the team a couple of years. Everyone knows DJ Smith has extra leash for him, but now finally he's being put down on waivers. Does this send a shockwave message throughout the dressing room, or like what does that do when you see that news? Okay, one of the veterans got waived.
Well, I mean, I think there's leash and then there's like having nine lives, right? And I think with Zaitsev, I mean, yeah, Ottawa, like most fan bases, we have a tendency to find a whipping boy. Like I thought a lot of the hate towards CC initially was a little unwarranted, but then, you know, the mistakes start piling on and then I can kind of understand where it's coming from, but that's another conversation. With Zaitsev, I feel like, you know, that was the guy to go after a while, but it was warranted in this case. And it was to no fault of his in that he was just constantly being thrown out there, basically being thrown to the wolves, right? Where, you know, I know the coaches, I know DJ had a soft spot for him. And, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you're going to protect the player. Maybe don't play him all the time. Certainly coming off a 4-game win streak just to spice things up on the back end. Right. Yeah. But I think as far as the mentality in the locker room goes, I think there's probably a mixture of, you know, this is too bad. You know, we're going to miss him. He's a good dude, you know, mixed with this is a relief, you know, because he was an absolute liability out there. And yeah. I don't like saying that about players because I still, you know, I've been doing broadcasting for a couple of years now and I still feel dirty when I badmouth a player, but I mean, enough is enough. And I don't feel bad. I mean, he was making 4.5 sheets or whatever it was a year. I mean, so he's getting paid. Yeah. But if you're not going to produce, I mean, like, then what? So I think it was long overdue. It had to get done. And good on Pierre for making that tough call. I don't think it was a tough call, but obviously it had to have been a little contentious because he'd stick around for that long. But it was done with. He's gone. We can all have peace of mind knowing now that JVD has come in and filled in that gap incredibly well. Now, consistency is going to be the issue for players like JBD, even for players like Sanderson. I don't see Sandy dropping off by any means, but guys, same with Pinto. Like let's not sleep on the fact that 82 games is a lot different than playing 30 to 50 games a season at the collegiate level. Right. So I think they're going to be okay as long as they're not overplaying and they're managing everything really well at the pro level. But yeah, with Zaitsev, it was long overdue. I don't think the team's going to be too heartbroken moving forward because it was costing them some games, quite frankly.
Coming up, we're going to get into some agent talk, not only what Meth referenced with Thomas Chabot's agent having a quick back and forth with TSN Simmer, but also Zaitsev on waivers. He's got the same agent as Artem Zub. You have to walk a tightrope. All that's coming up right after this on the Locked On Senators podcast. You are listening to a Friday episode of the Locked On Senators podcast. I'm Ross Levitan alongside Brandon Piller. We've got Mark Mathot with us as well. Meth, I want to start with something you brought up and noticed in last night's game. How many beers do you think Shane Pinto's buddies crushed on average?
A bunch of Long Island boys too. And you know, they were just wild. And it just killed me because you could tell they were in one right away, and understandably so, which I love. Like hockey, we need more of that. It's great. So, and it's awesome because you know, they're all like 20, 21, same age as Shane. Right after that first goal, you see the one guy flipping the double barrels to somebody up in the stands. I was dying laughing. It was great. I think it's awesome. And I love that the broadcast, I like that TSN zeroed in on them a couple times. They obviously cut right before the dude in the Sens jersey was flipping off the fans, but yeah, did a really good job with that. And yeah, you just like to see the support like that, right? It reminded me a lot of my first couple seasons when some of the boys from my circle of friends would come to the Ottawa games when I'd come in here with Columbus, rocking the jerseys and stuff like that and being real loud, some stupid signs in the stands. It brings me back to that. So good for Shane. He's got a good crew around him.
Yeah, one of them's actually a sports writer for the New York Daily Post. And so somebody replied to the video of him flipping the birds and they said, "I'd love to have a beer with Pinto's friends." And he replies, a verified account, he replies, he goes, "Careful what you wish for."
Nice.
That's awesome. I didn't know he was a legitimate writer. That's awesome. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So, and then that Pinto Beans account on Twitter said, if Shane Pinto scores a hat trick, like watch out for his buddies. And the same guy replied, said, "Pray for New Jersey if that happens." So they were in one. They were having a good time. We love to see it. Especially on the road, boots on the ground. And my favorite part, basically, my feed at Sen Central Meth on game days is people putting in Shawarma Palace platters and pictures of their feet on the ground in the arena. It's hilarious.
You guys have created a movement because on my feed now, all the retweets of looking at freaking shoes and the Shawarma platters. So I'm like, what is going on?
And then, we got to stick taps at Leams Marsh and he boots on the ground incorporated, but he goes in there and he gives it a decimal rank out of 10. It's an all-time bit. I absolutely love it. Pills, what do you got? Where do you want to go next?
Well, I mean, you teased it in the before the break, Ross. We got to get into this. What is going on when agents are firing back and forth on Twitter? Especially, Mark, it's interesting when agents are doing this for their players that are locked up on a big deal. Like if this was a Thomas Chabot contract year, hell yeah, I want my agent backing me up Alan Walsh style on Twitter. But I mean, Shabby's set. Like nothing's changing there. But what would you want your agent fighting your battles on Twitter for you? I guess I'll word it that way.
No, I would not. Now I know Walshy pretty well. He's very colorful on Twitter, on social media, but he cares about his players, right? Same with Pulver, I get it. But I definitely wouldn't feel comfortable with that. I mean, that's something that I think should stay off of social media. And never mind the fact that you're arguing with like a media personality that like that's his job. His job, whether you agree with like Simmer, for all of his like hot takes, like he's pretty knowledgeable. Like he's a smart guy when it comes to hockey, right? So I'm not saying I agree or disagree with him. Mind you, I have been pretty critical of Shabby lately too. And that's just that's our job, just like you guys. But yeah, no, it's a tough situation when your agent comes forward like that on Twitter, because it kind of just it almost just magnifies and highlights even more what the pundit is saying, right? Like, so you're just shining more light to the shit show. That's where I stand on it. I certainly would have a discussion with my agent afterwards and tell him to please just back off. I think, did Simmer delete some of his quote tweets on it? I think he did, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
All three of them.
Yeah. So he's obviously not wanting to get into a spat with an agent. Anyway, I like it though, because for me, like you guys actually sent me those through your Locked On account. this morning, and I'm like, oh boy, and I'm going through it in bed as I woke up, because I shut it down pretty early last night, but I saw the posts.
It's juicy stuff.
It's entertaining.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, and, we need more.
The same discussion. I know we're running out of time, but I sent Stoney, Mark Stone, a message last night after the game, because I'm like, what did I say to him? I'm like, you guys selling after that Eichel goal had me dying laughing. Because, you know, Eichel had his arms up there after his first. And I'm like, great stuff or whatever. Because Stone actually just bought a house not far from us here in Rideau Forest in Manitic. They bought a property. I think they're building here. Anyway, so we've been talking. So I sent him that. And he goes, most hostile environment I've ever seen. And that was his reply, right? So, you know, that leads me into the same conversation we had about Simmer and the agents. Like, we need more of this stuff. We need drama. Hockey's great. The product is great on the ice. But I love the extracurriculars. Like what Eichel did to the fans, I freaking love it. I wish more players did that stuff. But anyway, yeah, that's where we're at.
He was a half step away from going full Pinto, buddy, eh? Eichel after the third goal just takes his gloves off. And the irony of doing it the next visit after last year, he's like, oh, I've never heard this crowd so loud. And then to shut them up the next season.
And guys,
that guy is petty. I love it.
He had think of this. He had a hat trick. Like, that's insane.
All in the third period.
I know.
Wow. Oh, man.
So, you know, and they like him. I know people were like online. I read some comments where some people were questioning Eichel. Like these were Buffalo fans, disgruntled ones at that. Well, he's a cancer in the room or this and that. And I'm like, I can pretty well tell you with certainty. I don't, maybe he was rough to be around when he was unhappy in Buffalo, but the guys like him in Vegas. Like he's a very confident guy. A lot of the American players tend to be. But they like being around him. He's a character and, you know, he knows he's a good player and I like the swagger. I'm all for it.
Did you see though, maybe what this came from that thought process stemmed from? Cody Eakin was going in for a faceoff and Eichel kind of took a second to do a spin and he started stretching out his neck a bunch. And it was almost like he was mocking.
Oh.
It was almost like he was mocking Eichel.
Oh man. See, I had a good eye there, Ross. Yeah. I didn't see that. Anyway. Well then it's even more warranted at this point and I'm all for it. I love it.
I absolutely love it.
What are we doing here? Cause I see the timer and it's really making me nervous.
Oh, I know.
So what are you guys thinking now for the next X amount of games? Like, are they out of it in your opinion? We're talking about Ottawa here, of course.
Ross, you first.
What is the vibe going on here with Locked On?
Well, Pierre said we have 10 very important games and they're 0-2 since. So I'm going to say,
Oh, 1-1.
Oh, sorry.
Come on, Ross.
Sorry about that. Eh? Yeah. A little loser point action. No, you're right. If they lose in Philly, I'm probably going to start Googling the 2023 draft, which is the last thing I want to do. We'll have plenty of time for that draft. Oh my God. It's going to be a sick class, but I'm not ready for that. They need to win in Philly. And you know what? They don't only need to win. They need it to be a statement win. They need to win by a couple.
Agreed.
And I then next week.
Well, you look at the schedule. Like, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You look at the schedule for the next, I don't know, X amount of games. Like, there really aren't too many easy ones, right? Like, if they struggled against Vancouver and they have last night was understandable. I don't think they really expected to win that game. They tried to. But my point is, it's like you're looking forward here. There aren't really any tap-ins, right? Like this is going to be really difficult just to go 500, I think. And I'm saying that with acknowledgement towards the fact that they're not, you know, that with no Norris in the lineup, with no Artem Zub in the lineup. I don't know when Zub's back, but moving forward now with that current decor, a little thin up top as far as the centers go, not looking good.
How many out of these next group of games, Matt, do you think they need to get a bit of confidence back that at least they're going to play meaningful games deeper into the season? At Philly, home to the Islanders, home to Buffalo, home to New Jersey, and then they head out west for the San Jose, Vegas, Anaheim, LA trip.
And do you think that a West Coast trip's going to be easy?
No,
like, I don't care if any of those teams, even if the odd team is struggling over it, that West Coast trip is always a nightmare because the travel, you know, there's a bit of that time change thing that affects you a little bit and heavy teams, you know, it's a tough travel schedule. This is not going to be easier. Like I'm telling people, you need to be prepared for this. And everyone knows I'm always pro Sens. Like for a broadcaster, I lean very much towards them. I've got a bias. I want them to win. I benefit from them winning games. Same. But if I'm being honest, like, this is not going to be this. I mean, I'd be happy with a clean 500 sweep. Like, you go 500, you play 500 hockey. That would be my expectation level. Certainly the team is expecting to win more games. But I think if you're going to be honest with yourself and with the way they've been playing, I mean, I'll take 500 hockey at this point. And I mean that.
Yeah, very fair.
And that's not good. They're still going to be well below. Yeah. And you're still looking at being way outside of playoff contention point by Christmas.
Oh, that's brutal. All right, we had your colleague Bruce Garriott on. He had some great words for you. He said that you're great at keeping things clear and concise, and we need a quick answer here. But I need to ask, does Zaitsev and how the Sens treat him in these final days affect Artem Zub at all because they have the same agent? Or do agents do a good job at keeping each situation clean?
No, it doesn't affect it in any way whatsoever because Nikita Zaitsev has not been playing like an NHL player. Now, if this was a scenario where he had been playing decent hockey and it was a contract thing and they wanted to just get rid of him or whatever, then I can understand. But no, I don't believe this plays in part. I don't know what Bruce said, but to me, this seems like a non-issue. I mean, he dug his own grave here with this. And I wish him well. But I don't see a spot for him on this team. And I think the team handled it as best they could. They gave him a million opportunities. Yeah. Let's be honest.
And more than $1 million as well.
And more than $1 million.
If you're looking at, you know, how much this guy's been a part of the fabric of this team. I need a little trivia to finish off. Pilsy, who played more games for the Ottawa Senators? Mark Mathot or Nikita Zaitsev?
Ooh, that's got to be close, eh?
I don't even know the answer. I don't know.
I'm going Zaitsev.
Yeah, no, probably Zaitsev.
It's actually less close than I thought. Meth played 304, but Nikita Zaitsev playing 182 games.
Oh, so it's not even close. Oh, okay.
Well, there you go.
Wow.
But
I was hurt. I had a couple significant injuries too. But anyway, it's
the fact you had to think about it though is a problem in itself.
Yeah, that's not good. Yeah.
Zaitsev's 182 games is 70th in franchise history, right behind Sergei Gonchar. So to give you a status of just how long
he was. It feels like he's been here forever. Like, our whole podcasting experience has been the Nikita Zaitsev experience. So
I know, I feel bad. I hope he doesn't watch this stuff.
Oh, I hope so too. You know that he hasn't played an NHL game without DJ Smith on the bench. He brought him here after Toronto. He was his assistant defense coach in Toronto.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good stat. That's you should have saved that for more trivia.
That's a nugget for you next week on TSN, where we find Mark Mathot for every Sens home game on the TSN broadcast. We're already looking forward to next week on the show. We said Alfie stories this week. We're going to do that next week right after he's inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Always appreciate this, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
Always love our conversations with Mark Mathot. Stay tuned next week. We've got another one coming. And in the meantime, make sure you're Locked On Senators on YouTube, where we'd appreciate a subscription, comment, engage with it. It goes a long way for us. And make sure you're following the show on social media as well, at Sen Central on Twitter, LockedOn.Senators on Instagram. And have a great weekend. For Brandon Piller, I'm Ross Levitan. This has been the Locked On Senators podcast, your team every day.